This is the Berkshire Talking Chronicle radio reading service of UCP of Western Massachusetts, coming to you through our facilities of WRRS 104.3 LPFM Pittsfield, WNNI Adams, Channel 1302 Northern and Southern Community Television, and audio stream at ucpwma.org or the TIC network.org. Or you can listen to us by dialing 1-605-475-0129. We are located at 75 South Church Street, Suite 201, right here in Pittsfield. And this is Liz, your host for the Assistive Technology Show. And I am here with Peter Beck Esquire, and he is from our local community legal aid society. And what we are going to talk about today are what are some of your civil rights as a disabled person renting here in Berkshire County. This is going to focus mainly on central Berkshire County, but the county laws are the county laws, so we don't have to get too technical about that. But for all of you who have in the past or are a little concerned right now or know people that you want to make sure gets information, Peter is your man. All right. Welcome, Peter. Say hello.
Liz, thank you so much for having me today.
Well, you're most welcome. So we're going to start off with just a basic a general definition. When we're talking about community legal aid, what exactly falls under that umbrella and how does it work for most people?
Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people know that when someone's accused of a crime, they have a right to a lawyer.
Right.
But there are so many kinds of cases that happen in court every single day that aren't criminal. And when you're in a dispute with someone, a landlord, a neighbor, an organization, you don't have a right to a lawyer if you can't afford or pay for one. And so legal aid society or legal aid organizations try to fill some of the gap mm-hmm. of the fact that the court system is still very hard to navigate.
Yeah, it is.
Really, really important rights and issues are at stake in the civil mm-hmm. system. Obviously, in the criminal system, people are at risk of going to jail, right? They're at risk of losing their liberty. But in the civil system, you could be at risk of losing your benefits, at risk of losing your housing, at risk of losing so many of the essential needs of life, daily life. But you don't have that right to a lawyer. So legal aid organizations try to provide free legal services, mm-hmm. typically for people who income qualify. So we try to serve low-income households, mm-hmm. as many as we can, mm-hmm. when they're facing the kinds of civil legal issues that we can handle. So issues in housing, issues with benefits, issues across some of the spectrum of civil legal problems.
That are not criminal.
That are not criminal.
Right. Okay. That is great. And so right here in Pittsfield is where your office is. First off, give us your address.
Sure. Our Pittsfield office is here at 152 North Street. Mm-hmm. And we do have walk-in applications, but it's often easiest for folks to either use our phone or our online application. But for anyone for whom a walk-in or a just open office hours to check in and apply, we're at 152 North Street. And I'll say here our number and our website so that people can apply that way whenever that's easier.
Yep.
So our number is 855-252-5342.
Okay.
And our website is communitylegal.org.
And folks, just so you know, get a piece of paper and a pen because we're going to review that and repeat that at the end of the show as well. Okay. Onward. Okay. So what do you have any other offices in the county?
We don't have any other offices in the county, although we do have the ability to meet people in North Adams. So we rent some space in North Adams for folks who need to meet us there. And if you're in South County, we can usually arrange to meet people in Great Barrington as well. But our main office for the Berkshires is in Pittsfield. And I should add here that Community Legal Aid is the legal aid organization for all of Central and Western Mass. So we'll focus on the Berkshires today, and our Pittsfield office is the center of legal aid in the Berkshires, but Community Legal Aid is the legal aid organization from Worcester West. So we cover Berkshire, Franklin, Hampshire, Hamden, and Worcester counties.
Wow. You're as large as well, that's UCP's county area as well. That's,
and it's a really, really important and often overlooked geographic area. As we know, state laws, state policies, all kinds of issues sort of lose focus, you know, once you get too far west of Boston. And it's really important that we have these regional organizations serving central and western Massachusetts and the needs of our communities in central and western Massachusetts.
Yeah, because and here's a little fun fact for people that don't know. In the Berkshire County area, one in four households has somebody who is disabled. So that's 25% of the households have somebody who is in a vulnerable position. Maybe, maybe not, but that may need all of these services.
And with or without disabilities, we know that in more rural areas, access to services can be more difficult for all households, and sometimes in particular for households where there are disabilities present.
Yeah.
And so making sure that we have access to and can serve communities in these more rural areas is especially important.
Great, great. All right, so we're going to move on. Now that we've gotten to past the basics, what are some of the legal rights for people with disabilities in their rental housing situations? Like, give us the top 5 or 10.
Sure, sure. So first, I would say that the more specific we get, the more you'd want to try to consult with a lawyer if you can. Right? Mm-hmm. We can talk about the general overview of what rights everybody has. But the more specific your issue becomes about this particular landlord and this particular fact situation that you're in, the more important it is to try to reach out to us or another lawyer to get some specific tailored advice. We obviously can't offer any tailored advice today. But there are many laws at both a state and a federal level protecting tenants, protecting renters, and specifically protecting renters with disabilities. The most important, probably, for us to talk about today would be the Fair Housing Act. That was originally passed in 1968, but it was amended in 1988 to include disability. Sometimes in the law they called it handicap, but it applies the same way. That was amended in 1988 and includes as one of those protected characteristics, as one of those protected categories that you cannot be treated differently for, included disability.
Okay, and so let's talk about some hardcore, like, I need a ramp going into my apartment, or I need to be able to, you know, have a modification in the bathroom or some kind.
Yeah.
What are some of the rights and responsibilities that landlords have in those situations?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say the baseline, the fundamental principle to keep in mind is that everyone has an equal right to access and use and keep their housing in the same way, regardless of whether you have a disability or don't yet have a disability, regardless of what you look like or who you are, your religious background, your racial background, and your disability. You have the same right. You have an equal right to use, enjoy, access, keep your housing as anyone else. And so how that plays out specifically is sometimes exactly in the way you were describing. So what are some of the ways in which someone might face discrimination in rental housing for their disability? Well, you can face discrimination when you're trying to access housing in the first place.
So what would that look like?
So that looks like discrimination even before you've rented a unit or a home or an apartment or a condo or purchased one of these kinds of homes or dwelling units. So even before you've started renting, you have a right to access and rent that apartment just like anybody else. And you have a right not to be turned away or treated differently or offered worse terms or worse conditions or extra fees just because of your disability. So if your landlord or whoever is showing the unit to you is treating you differently because of your disability, saying that this unit might not be right for you, this building might not be right for you, that there's a this is probably going to be too hard for you. Oh, we can't work with wheelchairs here, or we can't change this or that feature of the building that you can already tell is going to make it very difficult for you to equally use and equally enjoy that building.
And we're in a unique place, aren't we, in New England, because a lot of these houses and a lot of these buildings are older, and so there are pre-law, accessibility law buildings that were not really built to be accessible.
It's an issue in so many ways, in so many areas of housing in this region, that our housing stock is as old as it is, and that we have as little new construction as we do. It comes up not just in disability rights, but in general, in affordability, in accessibility, in issues with lead paint. Right.
Yeah.
If you just think about the amount of our housing stock built before the 70s and full of lead paint.
Right.
And Massachusetts has a strong lead law in terms of what landlords need to do to make sure that their home is safe for everyone, but especially for kids.
Right.
But it's particularly an issue in our county. It comes up over and over again. You're exactly right, because of how old our housing stock is. So I would say, you know, the first place where someone might face discrimination is before they're even in the unit, when they're just trying to get a home, trying to get an apartment.
And what would be a course of action for somebody who found an apartment that they can afford, that they like the area, but the landlord is politely saying weeble-wobbling about their application?
It's tough. And we're going to talk about, you know, whether it's when you're looking for housing, when you're already in an apartment, or if you're being evicted from an apartment. So those are all the stages we'll talk about. And the answer is often the same in terms of how do you actually enforce your legal rights. If you decide that it has reached the point where conversation's not working, where, you know, sometimes people will just start with a gentle reminder to that landlord about the rights and responsibilities. You know, often you'll see, can I get there with conversation, right? People will often try to avoid making a big legal issue out of something if it can be resolved in a more informal way. Because litigation, going to court, takes time, takes money, takes energy, right? Even if you've got free legal representation, it can often be a big burden on your time and your energy just having to go through that process. So sometimes people will often, you know, first try to make sure people, knowing your rights is a big first step, knowing what your rights are, exactly like we're talking about today, and then insisting on your rights, making sure that that landlord or that realtor or whoever it is who's treating you differently because of your disability, making sure that they know your rights, that they know that you know your rights.
And so
that will be a first step.
Yeah, and what kind of language is an easygoing language way to say, well, yeah, but, you know, kind of thing? What would you recommend in that situation?
I would recommend that they have that sort of transparent, open conversation where they say, I really love this apartment and I can afford it, and I shouldn't be treated differently because of my disability. I have an equal right to be here, and I'm ready to be here. I'm able to be here. I can afford to be here, and this is the apartment I want, and how I manage my disability in this unit is up to me, right? You can't say that this unit wouldn't work for me, or I really don't suggest this. People get to decide for themselves what's the right home for them, right? And making it clear that they are in control of that situation.
And that's great, because there's nothing confrontational about it. It's just very clear that you understand and you can handle this. So that's a wonderful starting point.
And then we'll get to, either here or later, we'll get to what happens when it does get confrontational, because there are ways to insist on your rights and to enforce your rights.
Right.
But a lot of times you want to see, is this a situation that can get resolved without going through that process? It's up to the person. If they want to go straight, if they know that it's futile and they want to go straight to court, they want to immediately take it there, they can take it there. That's their right too. But for people who want to take that first step, that conversation, that know your rights and insist on your rights, that's often a first step that people will take.
Yeah, that's great. Great to have that. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, so we talked a little bit about what might happen as you're going into an apartment. But a lot of times, if we're thinking about these, you're asking, you know, when, what are people's rights and when might they come up? And so I would say those are the three moments we would think about when you're trying to get into an apartment, when you're already in an apartment and facing discrimination, or if you're being evicted from an apartment for a discriminatory reason. And we see all three of those, and they're all really important. When you were talking about a ramp or a bar or other kinds of modifications like that, those come up really frequently for people who are already in a unit. They might already be in a unit and realize that they need something changed about their apartment to make it more accessible to them. Or it might have been accessible to them and something changes in their lives, their disability changes, or they have a new disability and they need something now that they might not have needed before.
So, and that happens to a lot of people.
It happens to everyone.
Right.
It happens to everyone eventually, right? And so if it hasn't happened, it will happen eventually.
Yes, it
and
will.
So everyone needs something to make their home accessible to them. And when those things change as a result of someone's disability, you have a right to change your apartment or change policies that the landlord might have to accommodate your disability. And we can talk more specifically about what that looks like, but you have that right. You have that right to reasonable changes in how your apartment is run, in what policies there are in your apartment, and a right to change elements of your apartment to make it work for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And how do you see this being, what's the first step once you're in the apartment and you need to get something and you're not getting what you need?
Yeah. So the two kinds of changes that we were just starting to talk about when you're already in that apartment, sometimes you hear them referred to as a reasonable accommodation or a reasonable modification. And we'll talk about what both of those are. So a reasonable accommodation is usually where you need something changed about a policy or a way of doing things in that building that it's not working for you because of your disability. A really common one is your apartment might have, your building might have a no pets policy, right? But you need an assistance animal or some kind of service animal,
right?
And that would potentially violate, the building might say, oh, that would violate our no pet policy. Well, you need a change in that policy. You need a reasonable accommodation, a change to that policy so that you can have your assistance animal. Or another one that we see is when you have some kind of seniority or first come, first serve parking policy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And someone with limited mobility might need even if you don't have handicap or disability based parking spots, you might need a closer parking spot.
Right, right.
And so it'd be a change in that policy, the policy that parking spots are assigned first come, first serve, or by length of tenure in the apartment, right? You need a change to that policy. Those would be reasonable accommodations. A reasonable modification is where you need a physical change to your apartment.
Right.
You need a grab bar. You need a ramp. You need a doorbell that flashes a light instead of a sound. Or you need the signs in your common areas to have tactile or braille material or be higher contrast or a larger typeface or brighter colors. All of these might be reasonable modifications, physical changes to the apartment or the building. A big difference between those two, apart from the fact that one is changing a policy and one is changing something physical, is depending on the kind of building you live in, and here's where it might get a little too specific, where we need to know, you know, specific facts about a renter before you could say for sure. But depending on the type of building, for a reasonable modification where you're physically changing something, a lot of times, if you have just a private landlord, the renter is the one responsible for paying for that change. Now, there are plenty of buildings. There are plenty of larger buildings, right? There are larger buildings or housing authorities, public housing, federally funded buildings. There are all kinds of buildings where the landlord has to pay.
Right.
And especially for smaller private landlords, there are situations where the landlord has to accept your change. The landlord can't say, no, I don't want you changing the apartment.
Right.
But the tenant might have to pay for the change. So this depends on the building you live in. And so that's one of the areas where it's worth either doing a little looking up, you know, what might apply in your building, or hopefully being able to talk to a lawyer about it, because it can get pretty fact specific.
Oh.
But generally in smaller private homes, a change might have to be paid for by the tenant, even if the landlord has to accept the change. And generally in a larger building or in public housing, a landlord might have to pay for that.
Okay. I'm just going to insert something here for our listeners, that if by any chance you need a piece of equipment that makes your life easier in your home and it's not in your budget, feel free to call UCP at Western Massachusetts, because we have lots of stuff and we have ways of getting things for you at either an exceedingly reasonable cost, or your insurance can pick it up, or we even have something called a patch scholarship, where we have put aside, we raise money and put that money aside to help people, so just in these particular situations. And you all know how to find us, so let's go on.
That's fantastic. That's such an important resource.
It really is.
So we talked a little bit about what might happen if you're facing discrimination trying to get into a house, if you need a change while you're already living there. We also see landlords occasionally bringing discriminatory evictions, right, where you might lose your housing for some reason that's related to your disability. And we might particularly see these in cases of, for example, mental health issues, where a disability related to your mental health has caused some kind of behavior or appearance of behavior that a landlord is now saying violated your lease. And now they're evicting you and you're at risk of losing your housing because of something that might have been outside of your control, caused by your disability. And if that's the case, again, you have a right. You have rights under the law to protect and keep your housing. So if there's, again, just like the grab bar or the parking space, if there's some kind of change in a landlord's policy that would allow you more time, an ability to change what's going on, an ability to set up some feature that would reduce the impact of whatever happened, then that eviction might be slowed down or even stopped because of your rights under discrimination law. So maybe there's some feature of your disability, physical or mental health, that's creating more noise than might be typical in another apartment.
Right.
Well, before they can evict you for that, there might be a reasonable accommodation that could change. Maybe it's soundproofing the walls. Maybe it's putting in carpets. Maybe it's getting, you know, some sort of modification to the radio or TV to make sure that you have a greater awareness of what the volume is. Maybe it's headphones. There are all kinds of ways where you can change something about the landlord's policy to give yourself more time to figure out some way to accommodate what is being caused by or affected by your disability. You have rights.
Right. And so here's a kind of a practical question. So when a person who's living in their apartment and they have an issue like that with their landlord, is that a good time to call legal aid, or should you wait until you actually get the eviction notice?
It's always worth checking. It's always worth applying.
Yes.
Right? Because
so we shouldn't wait.
You shouldn't wait. You know, you might get a response from an application to an organization like ours that says, we might say exactly that. We might say, well, you haven't gotten a notice to quit yet. You haven't gotten a summons and complaint filed against you. These processes, these steps that officially start an eviction case, we might say, let us know when you get this. But even that give some peace of mind. You know, all right, when to do something, what to expect next, what the next steps are in a process that you're trying to avoid, right? So it's always worth applying or checking anyway. But one of the things we were talking about before is, well, how do you enforce some of these rights on your own? How do you make that request for a grab bar?
Exactly.
How do you make that request
for
a modification or for an exception to the no pets policy because of your assistance animal, or for additional soundproofing, or for a unit transfer when something happens? You know, you've got some number of months left on the unit you're in, but you actually need a more accessible unit now and one's available. How do you prioritize that you get that transfer, right? Because it's a disability-based need.
That's an interesting situation as well. It never occurred to me.
So these sorts of things, they pop up all the time, and they generally fit under that same category of how do you make that request? How do you make that reasonable accommodation request? Well, a lot of landlords, especially the larger ones, will have some kind of form for a reasonable accommodation or modification request. And they have that because these larger landlords especially, they know that they're obligated under the law to provide these accommodations, except in very limited circumstances. So they might have a form. Now, you don't have to use that form. There are no magic words to make your request. Often, if the form is pretty standard, we'll recommend using it anyway, or a tenant might want to use it anyway because it just it eases things along. It makes it easier.
Right.
It's just to say that if there's something that's rubbing you the wrong way about that form, if it's asking for things that just don't feel right or feels restrictive in some kind of way that you're not sure about, you can take a pause because there's no specifically required form. You can make a reasonable accommodation request in any way that's comfortable to you. It's best to have it in writing so you have that sort of paper trail that you've made this request on this date and you said this or that.
Right.
And again, often we'll use the forms that landlords provide because they're used to it. It makes things go more quickly. It keeps things amicable. If there's nothing wrong with the form, go for it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just to say, if a landlord's showing you some form that doesn't feel right in some way, you can take that pause and find out what's going on here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But typically, that's how it will be. You'll make that request. You'll make it in the office. You'll make it on their form. You'll make it by email to your property manager.
Mm-hmm.
You've started the process. You've started the process of making that reasonable accommodation request. They're not going to guess what you need.
Right.
You need to take that first that first step in terms of making the request yourself. And then that begins the process where they either grant it or they explain why they think they don't have to. Again, it's a pretty limited set of circumstances. If you're making a reasonable request, the law will often be on your side that that request should be granted because you, again, you have that equal right to access, use, and enjoy your housing just like anybody else.
All right. Well, that's good to know. That's very interesting. And I think it's very good that there are step one, step two, a methodical way of getting things done. So how, if a person needs to be helped through all of this, how do they, again, what's a logical next step?
Yeah. So now let's imagine that everything's fallen apart and it really does look confrontational and you know you need backup to enforce your rights. It's
right.
not working on your own. So first, you have organizations like ours. You have Community Legal Aid. Reach out. Apply. Come into the office, call, apply online, right? See if we can help. If you are on your own or can't find legal assistance to help, you still have rights. You still have rights. You can enforce them in court yourself. Again, that's hard. That can be hard, right? But people do it all the time. They file lawsuits on their own against their landlord who's discriminating against them, and they do it. They do it. They can file it in the housing court here in Pittsfield, right? And they can, that's one of the options. There's state court, there's federal court, there's our local housing court here in Pittsfield. So you can start a lawsuit on your own. We also, in Massachusetts, have the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. And you can file a discrimination complaint with MCAD, the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. That can often be a great option because they can investigate the complaint for you. They'll do it for free.
Wow.
And you'll have their expertise in fighting and combating discrimination on your side, right?
Mm-hmm.
The process can take a while. It can take a while, but the big advantage is that you have the support of their resources, their staff, their attention once you file that complaint. So you can go online. They have an office in Springfield, but they are also online. And
which
you can
is
start,
very important, yeah.
You can start the process of filing a complaint at the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. So again, if it's something really urgent, you might run into housing court or start a complaint at housing court. You might call Community Legal Aid. You might file a complaint with the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. These are all options for you to enforce your fair housing rights.
All right. Well, this is very important information. And I just want to take a moment to thank you, Peter, for coming in. This has been the Berkshire Talking Chronicle radio reading service of UCP of Western Massachusetts, coming to you through our facilities of WRRS 104.3 LPFM, Pittsfield, WNNI Adams, channel 1302, Northern and Southern Community Television, audio stream at ucpwma.org or theticknetwork.org, or by calling 1-605-475-0129. We are located at 75 South Church Street, Suite 201 here in Pittsfield. And this is Liz, your host for today's Assistive Technology show. Thanks for tuning in. Bye for now.